Blog Talk Radio.
Happy Friday, everybody. Welcome to the Michael Cutler Hour. I am your host, Michael Cutler. Always great to join you at the end of the week, at the end of the month, and frankly, today, at the end of the year, to play that game of catch-up. And there is so much with which we need to catch up. Those of you familiar with my program know that I'm a retired senior special agent of the former Immigration and Naturalization Service, an agency that was sliced and diced when George W. Bush created the Department of Homeland Security, or as I have come to call it, the Department of Homeland Surrender. My mission, ever since the attacks of 9/11, is to do whatever it is that I can do to provide my fellow citizens and our political leaders, so-called in all too many cases, with the perspectives on the significance of immigration law enforcement, border security, the effective administration of our immigration laws, and all related issues, because they impact virtually every challenge and every threat that America and Americans face in this turbulent and dangerous era where we are being confronted by transnational criminals, international terrorists, and the veritable army of foreign workers looking eagerly to supplant American workers in the workplace. Immigration is pivotal to all of those issues and many more. And that's how important it is. And yet, you would never know it to listen to the media, to listen to the majority of politicians from both the Democratic as well as the Republican parties. And it was Donald J. Trump who truly put immigration on the map with his ultimately successful campaign. And as I usually do, this evening will be no different. We will look at immigration and we will put it into the context of news events that have happened since my last program, that have happened very recently. Those of you, again, familiar with me know this, but I'm going to put it out there for the new folks, and as a reminder for those of you who are regulars or who have visited my website before, there are a few websites I would very much like for you to go visit. First of all, my own personal website, which makes it my favorite website. It's Michael Cutler, one word, michaelcutler.net, C-U-T-L-E-R, one word, michaelcutler.net. For many years, I've been affiliated with an organization based in Santa Barbara, California. My friends at Californians for Population Stabilization, their website is capsweb.org. And in fact, just yesterday, they posted my most recent commentary. And it's kind of good advice for everybody for the coming year. The title of my article, Let's Start the New Year by Resolving to Be Honest About Immigration. So that kind of sets the tone, doesn't it? Also, I'm very proud to be a contributor, a columnist for Front Page Magazine, sponsored by the David Horowitz Freedom Center. I also write for The Social Contract. So please check all of those out. See what mischief I've been up to along with some other terrific folks. But let's get started by looking at what we saw happen back on December 19th. When Berlin was attacked, allegedly by a Tunisian, 24 years old, a thug by the name of Anas Amri. And this guy had been previously imprisoned in Italy for committing violent felonies, including a torching of a refugee camp and other crimes, and does 4 years in jail in Italy, heads for Germany, and of course, the European community, it's easy to bounce from one country to the other. Borders, we don't need no stinking borders, right? So he gets himself into Germany. And once he's in Germany, he applies unsuccessfully for political asylum. Now, they rejected his application because it was known by German authorities that this guy was very much involved with members of radical Islamic groups. So think about this genius. This is Merkel is Germany's answer to Obama. And I suspect that if she may not like this, but I don't think her political future is any brighter than Obama or the Democratic Party with all that has transpired in the last few years. Germany has thrown open the doors to God knows how many refugee asylum seekers from the Middle East whose identities cannot be verified. And as I've written about previously and I've discussed previously, John Brennan, the head of the CIA, when he's testified before Senate hearings, warned that ISIS is embedding terrorists in the refugee flows. We know from James Comey, the head of the FBI, during his hearings, that there is no way to vet the people coming out of Syria. ISIS overran government office buildings, stole blank passports, blank identity documents, and the printing machinery and other devices that are needed to crank out authentic-looking documents. So we don't know who anybody is, even when they present proper documentation. This might be bogus. Big mess. But what the heck? Merkel had an open border agenda, very obviously. When German women were attacked, raped, assaulted, she blamed them for being too pretty. Those Fräuleins, shame on them for being so pretty. Holy smoke. Time and again, we have seen government leaders, so-called, putting the safety of their own citizens way behind this need to open up the borders and let the world in. Let's let the world in. What could possibly go wrong? Attack after attack. We've seen it in Belgium. We saw it in France. We've seen it in the United States. We've seen it in Spain. We saw it in Bombay, or Mumbai, as it's now called. But these idiots don't learn from history. And that's what is really so astonishing. And in fact, the idea that they don't learn from history caused me in my article for Front Page Magazine to quote a world leader. True world leader, part of what is now called the greatest generation. Let me read you this quote. Put this in context. When the situation was manageable, it was neglected. And now that it is thoroughly out of hand, we apply too late the remedies which then might have effected a cure. There's nothing new in the story. It is as old as the Sibylline books. It falls into that long, dismal catalog of the fruitlessness of experience and the confirmed unteachability of mankind. Want of foresight, unwillingness to act when action would be simple and effective, lack of clear thinking, confusion of counsel until the emergency comes, until self-preservation strikes its jarring gong, these are among the features which constitute the endless repetition. As for who said it? It was Sir Winston Churchill when he addressed the House of Commons on May the 2nd, 1935, as storm clouds were gathering on the horizon. How prophetic were his words! Of course, George Bernard Shaw, the famed playwright, put it a bit more succinctly. We learn from history, but we learn nothing from history. So never mind all the terrorist attacks, never mind 9/11. Never mind the other attacks here in the United States, the shooting at the CIA by Cansey in January 93, or a month later in February of 93, the deadly bombing at the World Trade Center that inflicted $500 million in damage, almost brought one of the towers down sideways, killed six people, wounded over 1,000 people. Never mind all those lessons. Ignore it. It's just a bad day. Never mind 9/11. Never mind San Bernardino. Never mind what happened at the Boston Marathon. Never mind the other attacks that thankfully weren't successful. Faisal Shahzad, the Times Square bomber. We naturalized him, and 13 months later, he tried to blow up a car bomb in Times Square, crossroads of the world. Of course, now you see Times Square looks like an armed camp because of concerns that terrorists might attack. But that's okay. We have to let them in. This is about free trade. This is about the United States Chamber of Commerce and what they want, no borders, let them in. We expand the visa waiver program, a program that should have been terminated before it was born, but once created, certainly after 9/11. But on 9/11, we have 26 visa waiver countries. Today, because of the Chamber of Commerce spending God knows how many millions, probably hundreds of millions of dollars on bribes, I mean campaign contributions, partnering with the hotel, hospitality, and travel industries, have flung open the doors, and now we have 38 visa waiver countries. Never mind that the 9/11 Commission warned that the visa process needed to be tightened up. What was more important was for the politicians to get their payoffs. And they did. They got their money, and people die, and all's right in the world for them because they didn't suffer the losses. Other families did. So you've got Merkel throwing open the doors, and we have a catastrophe in Berlin. Berliners and others celebrating Christmas, you know, browsing through a Christmas market. And just as we saw in Nice on Bastille Day, by the way, that truck also driven by a Tunisian, a little bit older, 31 years old. This fool comes down there and mows down all these innocent people with their children, creates carnage in the name of his twisted version of Islam, radical Islamist that he is, thug that he is. You know, and so now you look at what happens in the aftermath. Are we learning the lessons? Not really. Because here's what nobody really wants to talk about in the mainstream media. And again, that's why I do this program, because I'm tired of the mainstream media lying through their teeth. It's either the crime of omission or the crime of commission. Either they flat out lie or they just don't give you all the information. When that guy, Annis, crossed that border into Germany, it became possible for him to carry out the attack. That was something the 9/11 Commission said. Pretty obvious. In order to attack us, they have to come here. That's about borders, isn't it? Well, not only does the border permit the terrorist or the criminal to enter the country to do his or her dirty deed, but that border can also be the safety hatch, the escape hatch through which they leave. And that's what this guy did. He mowed down all those victims, ran like the wind, got himself into France. From what I've read, there's now a video of this guy in the French train station catching a train into Italy. Now, how does it end? It ends when two Italian police officers see him and stop him. Now, before we go further, I want you to understand something. Those two Italian police officers were not part of a counterterrorism effort. They weren't looking for this guy specifically. They were on patrol, doing what police officers do around the world, looking for somebody out of place, somebody who's just not right where he is. And they see this guy and they become suspicious. You develop that sixth sense in law enforcement. I certainly relate to it, having been a federal agent for 30 years. And they approach him and they say to him, "Can we see some ID, please?" And so he reaches into his backpack, pulls out a gun, and opens fire on the police. Thankfully, although one officer was shot, it wasn't, from all I've read, a serious wound. He was shot in the shoulder. Certainly, I wouldn't wish that on anybody. But he will survive, they say. And his partner returned fire and killed this piece of garbage. But this is the point that I want you to understand. This is what you need to take to the bank. For all the talk about, well, we should only deport criminal aliens, the people that come to mow our lawns and wash our dishes, let them alone. They're poor people. They're poor. We don't know who they are. We don't know where they're from. We don't know why they came. But that's okay. They're going to do the jobs that the Americans won't do. So let them be. Just let them alone. Don't bother. Don't mess with them. Don't deport them. Just be decent. Show compassion. This is a stupid and ignorant as it gets. You know, if you read anything about intelligence operations or law enforcement, the notion of a sleeper is very real and very serious. The reason they call sleepers sleepers is that they do not call any attention to themselves whatsoever. They don't jaywalk. They don't spit on the sidewalk. They don't shoplift. They don't take a piece of chewing gum without paying for it. They do absolutely nothing to arouse suspicion or to cause the police to take notice of them. When they pass people on the street, they smile and say, good morning, good evening, how are you? Have a nice day. And meanwhile, they might be working on a bomb. Meanwhile, they might be working on plans to carry out a deadly attack. But they don't want anyone to know who they are or that they're there until the day of the attack. So understand something. It has been said that an effective spy is somebody who would not attract the attention of a waiter or waitress at a greasy spoon diner. I would add it might well be that waiter or waitress who is the spy, and terrorists operate precisely, exactly, identically. They don't call attention to themselves until the day of the attack. The day before an attack, a terrorist is likely to go to the job he or she has had for months or years, or may attend those classes at a university that they've been going to for the past couple of years, laying low, keeping a low profile, flying under the radar. It's like fighter planes, you know, getting into enemy territory by flying low to avoid radar. They fly low to avoid the attention of authorities or even their neighbors. Understand that. The problem is that we don't know what we don't know. And we hear all this talk about vetting and terror watch lists and no-fly lists. This isn't Santa Claus. Those lists aren't perfect. I hope Santa Claus's lists are better, because there are people who should be on the list and aren't, and unfortunately people on the list who probably shouldn't be. It's an imperfect science. But most terrorists are unknown until the day of the attack. And further complicating it is the fact they frequently use false ID, which is why I am so infuriated that Mayor de Blasio of New York City has seen fit to give nearly 1 million illegal aliens municipal identity documents. Which brings us back to the issue of sanctuary cities, but we'll get back to that in a moment. Guy Annis is stopped by two cops on routine patrol. They weren't looking for a terrorist. They weren't looking for him. They were simply going about their job, keeping the community where they were on patrol safe. And this guy, for whatever reason, aroused their suspicion, and when they approached him, he went for his gun. You know, many police officers are shot, wounded, attacked, whatever, by people where the cop has no idea who the bad guy is. The bad guy sees that uniformed cop and says, uh-oh, he's after me, and he shoots the police officer. That's why car stops are so dangerous. That's why law enforcement is dangerous. You don't know what you're walking into when you stop somebody. Let me tell you, there is no such thing as a routine stop done by law enforcement. Some of the most routine stops turn into high-speed chases and shootouts with deadly consequences. My very first assigned case was to take a statement from a young Israeli man who had an altered visa. It was a nothing case. If he didn't want to talk to me, it would have been just fine with my bosses, because we knew he altered his visa. I was simply supposed to take a deposition just to get into the practice of it. It was the end of my first year as an agent. I was completing my training. The first time I was told I could do something without a senior partner sitting next to me. And lo and behold, story attached. I won't go into it now. But this guy was with the PLO. He was here to get the money to buy explosives to carry out a bombing at an Israeli oil refinery. I played a hunch. The Israelis became involved. I called them into the case, in fact. We brought in the FBI, and eventually the Israeli National Police arrested a half dozen of this guy's cohorts in Israel within a week or so of the day that the attack was supposed to happen. This nitwit was here to get the money to help them buy the explosives to carry out a deadly terrorist attack. Routine, mundane, nothing to see here. Take a statement, he's going home tomorrow anyway. Kaboom. The whole world changed, and because of it, we prevented a deadly attack. There is nothing routine. Immigration law violations are not insignificant. The nonsense, oh, it's an administrative violation of law. This isn't even a crime. It's a civil problem. No, it's not, folks. And if an alien has been previously deported and runs the border, That simple act of getting across that border is a 2-year felony, and if the alien in question was deported because of a criminal history, that crime may carry with it a 20-year jail sentence. There are not that many federal crimes that call for 20 years in jail. And in fact, I worked with Senator Al D'Amato back in the early 80s with several other people, and by coincidence with one of my former bosses who became a mentor, a gentleman by the name of Walter Connery. We brought that law into existence. And in 2010, by the way, before Obama went on his anti-immigration enforcement rampage, 30% of all federal prosecutions in the United States were for unlawful reentry by criminal aliens, aggravated felons, as the law calls them. Not exactly routine. So when people say, oh, it's not even a crime, it's not a big deal. It's a big deal. It's a big deal because these are people who have entered the United States covertly. The lie, they've entered undocumented. What in the world does that mean? Look up, they entered undocumented, using the word undocumented as a verb. How did he come? He came undocumented. Doesn't exist. It's a fabrication by Jimmy Carter, who was the dementor, if you will, of Barack Hussein Obama. This is a fantasy, entered undocumented. Entered without inspection is one of the ways you can be an illegal alien. Another way to become an illegal alien is enter with a visa and commit a felony. You know, rape, murder, arson, child abuse, whatever. That makes you also deportable. No, they call him undocumented. He's undocumented. Right. Undocumented. The guy that kills 3 people, you know, beheads them, whatever. We deport him. He comes back. Oh, he entered undocumented. Folks, this language has got to stop. And that was the reason that I wrote that article for capsweb.org about starting the new year by resolving to be honest about immigration. You know, for the longest time, what we've been hearing from the conservatives. And I don't see this as a conservative issue. These are American issues. And by the way, the Democrats are not liberals. Let's stop the nonsense. I consider myself a liberal. I'm a lifelong registered Democrat. You know, let's be fully honest with each other. The Democratic Party used to be a liberal party. It is now a party of fascists and totalitarians. Shut down debate, shut down discussion. We have never before in my lifetime, and I suspect in the history of this nation, seeing a situation where a political party's candidate loses the election, and rather than that peaceful transference of power that Hillary Clinton spoke about during the debate with Donald Trump, I worry about you, Donald. You may not accept the outcome of the election. Did she? Did the Democratic Party? No, they didn't. So we hear this nonsense. This is because of the liberals. No, it's because of totalitarians who have hijacked the Democratic Party. It is disgraceful. The rest of the world must be looking at these jackasses and saying to themselves, what in the world has happened to these political nitwits? It reflects so poorly on America. And you look at the Hollywood elite, my goodness gracious, actors and actresses are just that. They act, they make believe, they live in the phantom zone, the imaginary zone. The words that come out of their mouth, oh, he's a hero. No, he's not. He is parroting the words that a bright screenwriter shoved in his mouth. All that actors and actresses are ventriloquist dummies. Ventriloquist dummies. Now, some are very good, some are very bright, some are very wonderful. But how many of them have drug issues? And, you know, think of Charlie Sheen, the guy who had the brass to say that he was sorry that Trump didn't die when all these other movie stars died. How dare he? How dare he? Classless, vulgar, grotesque. And people run to the movies to give these people megabucks. And do you know how many of these so-called movie stars, I don't know where this idea of the star came from, demand so much money above anything that the production company can pay them that the people behind the cameras, the electricians and the grips and the camera people, the sound people. You know, when you look at the end of the movie, you see this army that did the film. These people have to take less than scale so that they can save enough money on their wages to give these overinflated blowhards more millions of dollars. You know, I mean, this is crazy stuff. And they go out there, we're going to leave America if Donald Trump is, you know, are you kidding me? Why? What Trump said was, let's secure the borders, let's enforce immigration laws. That's bigotry. Not at all. Not at all. The immigration laws aren't about race, religion, or ethnicity. It's about keeping out criminals, about keeping out aliens with dangerous diseases. It's about keeping out spies and terrorists and human rights violators and fugitives from justice. Does that sound like bigotry? If it is, then I am bigoted against thugs and criminals and terrorists and fugitives and people that would commit crimes against humanity. You want to call that a form of bigotry? I'm bigoted against evil people. That's who's on that list of who's to be kept out of the United States. But these nitwits who probably can't read have to have maybe someone read it to them. Oh, if Trump is a racist, oh, we're not going to celebrate his election. Oh, how can he be president? Why in the world would you not want a president to look out for your best interests and your safety and the safety of your children? That's what the laws are about, ladies and gentlemen. The lie that this is about being anti-immigrant started with the fabricated use of language by Jimmy Carter, and this is not about being politically correct. We've got to stop this nonsense. This is Orwellian. This is about altering perceptions by altering language. This is carefully calculated. It is con artistry at its worst and most insidious. And so the folks that are upset with the Obama administration keep saying, well, he refuses to say radical Islamist terrorists. The whole administration did. And I will never get over the fact that he kept referring to ISIS as ISIL, referring to the Levant, which denies the existence of the State of Israel. And if there was any doubt about why he kept calling it ISIL instead of ISIS, we know what we saw at the UN. And by the way, the British Prime Minister went after John Kerry, a.k.a. Lurch, over his despicable performance just 2 days ago in justifying how Obama could attack America's closest ally in the Middle East and one of our closest allies in the world. Because of the work that I did on that terrorism case, I had the privilege of working closely with the Israeli National Police for well over a quarter of a century. And I can tell you, having worked with other governments and other law enforcement agencies, I never worked with a group of people that were more eager, more happy to help America and American law enforcement than the Israeli government. They actually provided transportation for their criminals. You know, we hear all these countries don't want to take their criminals back. Not only did Israel take their criminals back, very often they would fly them back on an El Al airplane accompanied by Israeli police officers, so we, the American taxpayer, would not have to pay the airfare and would not have to send American federal agents to accompany the criminal back to Israel. All we had to do was get the guy over to the airport, and we would transfer him into the custody of the Israeli National Police, who were more than delighted to take the person back and put them on trial for crimes they were wanted for in their home country, in Israel. I arrested one guy who was wanted for a brutal murder, for example. We didn't have to send him back there. We brought him to the airport, and he was subsequently convicted. And I was sent a newspaper clipping with a thank you note telling me, good job, justice has been served. We just got this guy convicted of a murder. By the way, it was an Israeli man who killed a Palestinian woman. Let's see that fairness play out on the other side of that. Let's see what Hamas would do in that set of circumstances, or the Palestinians would do. You know, let's get past the nonsense and the lies and understand what we're dealing with. Just as the Obama administration referred to ISIS as ISIL, and just as the Obama administration refused to use the term radical Islamic terrorist, we've got to start to use the term alien to provide clarity to the debate. And I made that point when I was on Newsmax TV with Bill Tucker a couple of days ago. And I've also included a link to the video of my interview with Bill Bill's an old friend. He used to be a correspondent with Lou Dobbs when Lou was over at CNN. And I must have been on Lou Dobbs Tonight when he was at CNN over 100 times. And also, very often, they use my materials on the air and so forth. I know the producers would frequently call me for advice while they were on the air or before they went on the air, so they would get their facts straight, and I'd be happy to help them out. So Bill Tucker is now over at Newsmax, and he interviewed me. That was the point that I made. We need clarity in this debate, and we need it for a few reasons, not the least of which being that by blurring the distinction between aliens who are legal immigrants on the path to citizenship and aliens who are here in violation of law, when you blur that distinction, think how you betray the lawful immigrants who are so excited to live out their American dream and come to America in accordance with law. And people look at them sideways because when they hear the word immigrant today, they presume the person came here illegally. What you may not know is that every year we admit approximately 1 million lawful immigrants. These folks are immediately placed on the pathway to citizenship. That number, 1 million, is greater than all of the other immigrants admitted by all of the other countries on planet Earth combined. We naturalize hundreds of thousands of immigrants, give them citizenship. And then you have people like Chuck Schumer and Lindsey Graham, who stand shoulder to shoulder with him. Forget about political party affiliation. That's how important open borders are for Graham and John McCain. But they make the statement, well, these people need to be made citizens. We have to make citizens. How else can we make citizens? Folks, we're naturalizing hundreds of thousands of citizens every year. They come legally, they follow the law, they meet the standards. Actually, very often the system has such a lack of integrity because we're moving so many applications that we wind up naturalizing criminals. We've naturalized terrorists because we didn't do the proper background investigation. But that's not the fault of the honest people who come here looking to become Americans. As my mother did, as my dad's parents did, they came legally looking to be part of that wonderful tapestry that we call America. How insulting, how humiliating, how unfair is it to those millions of lawful immigrants who waited online, did what they're supposed to do, to be lumped in with people who run our borders or commit felonies and are ordered deported but come back illegally? There's a huge difference, a very big difference. But to the open borders immigration anarchists, the name of the game is blur the distinction, make it impossible to understand what's going on, let's obfuscate the issues. Let's blow lots of smoke and let's confuse people and let's make some accusations so we intimidate Americans into keeping their mouths shut and not saying anything and not complaining. That's the name of the game. Never mind what the 9/11 Commission warned. Never mind the Berlin attack or the Nice attack or the fact that in New York they now have blocker trucks, huge, huge monster dump trucks filled to the top with sand, to make sure that nobody with a truck rams the festivities at Times Square tomorrow. This is all after the fact. This is about terrorists who may be here already. Terrorists who may be here already. And yet, if you dare say, let's enforce the immigration laws, these open borders anarchists on college campuses across the country and in newsrooms of TV stations around the United States will tell you, oh, you're anti-immigrant, you're a bigot, you're a racist. Aliens do not have an inherent right to enter the United States. One of the biggest distinctions about being a citizen of the United States and being an alien, even if you have a green card, is that aliens must, when they go through the inspections process, convince the inspector at that port of entry, and this is the job I did for the first 4 years of my career with the INS, I'm intimately familiar with it. They must convince the inspector that they are here in accordance with law. And that's why they are inspected. Citizens, folks, are not inspected. They are examined. It might sound like semantics, but it's done with a purpose. When I went to Border Patrol Academy, and back when I hired on in 71, everybody that got a badge at immigration went to the Border Patrol Academy in Texas. And what they told us was that when an American citizen walks into that booth at a port of entry and the inspector sees that person, as soon as the inspector is convinced that that person standing in front of him or standing in front of her is a citizen of the United States, That person is no longer inspected but examined, meaning you just check the documents and you make certain that the person isn't wanted for arrest by another law enforcement agency, because there were times when I held people who were wanted by DEA or the FBI or perhaps New York City Police or some other police authority because the guy was a bank robber or a drug dealer or a hijacker or a murderer. So you would hold them. You're not going to let them just walk freely. But under no circumstances can the United States citizen be denied entry into the United States. They have got to be admitted. Aliens do not have to be admitted. Strangers do not have the right to walk into your house with being uninvited. The only time somebody may walk into your house without an invitation is if it's a law enforcement officer with a warrant, or if they pursue someone into your house because they were in hot pursuit. Those are the only two times, even with my badge, I couldn't just kick some guy's door down because I wanted to talk to him or her. Either I had a warrant or I didn't. And if I knocked on the door and the guy said, "I'm not talking to you, go away," either I got a warrant or I left. A person's house is inviolate. You just can't barge in. Our borders are supposed to be inviolate also. And we're being told, oh, if you want to keep any alien out, you're mean, you're nasty, you're not compassionate. How about the fact that it's been estimated that 7,000 innocent people are killed every year by aliens who have no lawful right to be in the United States, whether it's because of a drunk driver or a criminal or a terrorist or whatever. Now, that statistic came about when Steve King, a congressman from Iowa, asked me at a hearing if I knew how many people lost their lives to illegal aliens. And I said, "I don't have that number, Congressman, but I can assure you that it would be a multiple of the number of people who died on 9/11. He told me afterwards, and he made mention of this at news conferences and at a hearing, that that comparison rang such a resonant bell in his heart that he commissioned the GAO to do a study, and from what he told me, the GAO came up with that number, that a minimum of 7,000 innocent people lose their lives every year in the United States to aliens who shouldn't be here. Where's the compassion there? Where's the compassion for the American workers who lose their jobs to foreign workers? Trump says, you know what? We're going to revisit that whole business with the H-1B visa program, the fact that we're admitting more authorized workers and the number of new jobs we're creating. And then you have Michelle Obama on the Oprah Winfrey show saying that now that Obama is leaving the White House, hope is going. What hope? It's been reported that there are 95 million working age Americans who've left the labor force. Do they have hope? What are they hoping for? More unemployment insurance? The lies keep coming. The nonsense keeps coming. And there was an effort by the Democratic Party to intimidate Americans. And look at this whole business with Russia now. And I just find it astonishing. The first complaint was that Hillary lost the election because of Comey and his statements. Then the assertion was she lost the election because of Russian hacking. There was also allegations that there was some irregularities in the voting booths as well. Jill Stein went out there and had a recount. And guess what? They found that Trump actually got more votes when they did the recount. They found that at least in Detroit, three districts found that they had more people voting in the election than were registered to vote in the district. How does that happen? If they were screaming about irregularities in the voting booth, there were none. There were none. So they went through. It's Comey's fault. It's the election's fault. It's the Russians' fault. Now, should we be concerned about Russian hacking? You're damn right. We should also be concerned about Chinese hacking. And by the way, and I've written about this, and I believe I spoke about it last week, right now we have 514,000 foreign students studying the STEM curriculum, science, technology, engineering, and math in the United States, including computer programming. Guess which two countries send us the greatest number of STEM students? Far and away, it's China and India. And so India sends us their H-1B visa workers, and they displace the Americans. We're training them here, and then they take Americans' jobs. And the Americans have to train them on their way out the door if they want their severance package. How nice is that? And then you've got China. China is now arming its artificial islands in the South China Sea with surface-to-air missiles, undoubtedly designed by engineers who were trained in the United States. This is the kind of stuff that we're doing to ourselves. And Donald Trump says, let's stop doing this. And you have people fainting on campuses, crying like little children. They need a comfort puppy to pet because they're distraught. Distraught about what? That you finally have somebody who's going to become the president of the United States who wants to put America and Americans first, and people are frantic about this? This toxic environment over open borders and unlimited supply of cheap labor and foreign tourists is killing this country. It's killing the middle class by design. You know, go to my website, go to michaelcutler.net, go to capsweb.org, go to Front Page Magazine or The Social Contract. I have written about the engineered destruction of the middle class by supplanting American workers with foreign workers. And you have Oprah Winfrey and you have Michelle Obama wailing about, oh my God, Barack Obama is leaving, so there's no more hope in America. Hope is gone. Was there hope in America when those kids were rioting in those neighborhoods in Baltimore and St. Louis and elsewhere? How many of those kids are living below the poverty line? How many of those kids can't make an honest buck of consequence? And so they're probably having scrapes with the law, so when they see a police officer, they don't see a friend, but they see an adversary. And then the Obama administration capitalizes on that and turns the cops into the villains because there's some police shootings. And there were some police shootings that were horrific. There's a cop on trial for shooting a black man in the back right now. I don't want to get in the middle of it, but it sure as hell looked bad to me. And if in fact the jury finds he's guilty, then he gets whatever he deserves. But those are aberrations. Look how many police officers have been gunned down, have been ambushed. And if you look at what's happening in Chicago, Obama's hometown, the murder rate is more than the number of homicides committed in New York and Los Angeles combined, and the number of arrests are down. Why are the number of arrests down as crime goes up? Because the police have been intimidated into not doing their jobs by the Obama administration. The cops are the bad guys. You know, when I was an immigration agent, we used to have an expression, big cases, big problems, little cases, no problems. The cop that does not get out of his or her patrol car to question a suspicious person can't get into trouble. Can't get into trouble. If they ignore what they're seeing, they can't get into trouble. So, how aggressively are police officers supposed to enforce the law when they know that anything, you know, they need their own Miranda warning? Anything they do will be used against them. It has a chilling effect on law enforcement doing their jobs. And what's the result? People are dying. And in Chicago, it's mostly black-on-black crime. Let's be honest about this stuff, folks. We are in terrible shape because of this firestorm that Mr. Obama ignited. He has been an arsonist here. He's been an arsonist in the Middle East. This is like the Democratic Party is on a rampage. It's kind of a murder-suicide. The Democratic Party did not do well on this election. It wasn't just that Hillary Clinton lost the election. You could say, well, one person. How many mayoralty races went to the Republicans? How many gubernatorial races? What's the situation in Congress and the Senate? The Republican Party is doing a lot better than the Democratic Party, and there's only one reason. Enough people, as Abe Lincoln said, you know, you can fool all the people all the time and some of the people all the time, but you can't fool all of the people all the time. And people are catching on. They're saying, wait a minute. We have gangs. We have the president releasing hundreds of thousands of criminal aliens, releasing convicted drug dealers, releasing people from prison who were in jail because they used guns in the commission of felonies. He's releasing them because this is about social justice or some wacky notion, and they go out and they commit more crime, and people are saying, we're not going for this. There are a lot of people very unhappy with Obamacare because of how expensive medical insurance has become. There are many people who are very unhappy about a whole bunch of stuff. You know, when the Ford Motor Company tried to market and sell the Edsel around 1959, 1960, nobody bought it. And the Ford Motor Company, in business to make money, said, well, the people aren't buying the product, let's yank it. So the Edsel was a short-lived car. I believe it ran, the model year ran for 2 years, roughly, and it got yanked. The Obama Edsel, if you will, has been around for 8 years. And yes, I don't know how, but the polls, and you know what I think about polls, have him doing pretty okay in the polls, but certainly the Democratic Party is not doing okay. And if Mr. Obama was so concerned about the actions of the Russians, and this is something that no one's really talking about, let's put it into the context of the reckless conduct of Hillary Clinton with her private, unsecured server and her missing tens of thousands of emails. See, the missing email was a crime, but not the primary crime. That was the cover-up. The crime, in my judgment, was the private email server that she was not allowed to use to store or receive or transmit classified material. That's a felony. I held a top secret clearance. Her clearance was far, far, far higher than my top secret. I don't even want to imagine what would happen to me if I did something like that, and I did not have access to the sort of sensitive material she did. The material I had access to was quite sensitive, make no mistake. But she really had access to the family jewels. And so when she was told that Congress wanted to see the email, suddenly they vanished. That's the equivalent of a drug dealer throwing drugs and guns out of the window of his car as the police are chasing him. That's what that is. It's called a cover-up. And it's always the cover-up that creates the biggest nightmare for the defendant. In this case, hopeful defendant. Because she should be made to answer for what she did. And I'm not being partisan. I'm registered as a Democrat, and I'm mortified at what the Democratic Party has morphed into. This certainly is not my parents' Democratic Party. But look at what Obama did to empower Russia from the day he came to office. I want to just recap quickly. America was the envy of the world for its achievements in space. We landed men on the moon repeatedly and returned them safely to the Earth repeatedly more than 40 years ago. John Glenn just passed away. He didn't go to the moon, but he was part of the original Mercury 7 astronauts. These were world heroes. No country has yet landed men on the moon. We did it several times. I got to meet some of those amazing astronauts. I met Jim Lovell, Dave Scott, Jim McDivitt, unbelievable human beings. I met Gene Kranz, flight director. We built the space shuttle. The Russians tried. They built a space shuttle-looking vehicle. They called it, I believe, the snowstorm or the blizzard. I forget the name now, translated from the Russian. It's now an exhibit in a park. It never flew with astronauts on board. They flew it by remote control. They had problems with it. They parked it. That was it. We sent up basically a space truck that repeatedly went into orbit, serviced the Hubble Space Telescope, did things that no other country could ever do. It gave us an amazing operational capability. And as soon as he came to office, Obama grounded the space shuttle. He clipped America's wings, literally and figuratively. Clipped America's wings. And since that day, America has had to go hat in hand and checkbook in hand and go to the Russians and say, please, 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 can I go for a ride? Daddy, 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 can I go for a ride, please? Why in the world did he do it? I believe that when he came to office, the notion of American exceptionalism was something that Barack Obama did not want to see continue. Let's clip America's wings. It's ironic that at the time that Obama announced sanctions against Russia, that Russia announced that they had worked out a ceasefire in Syria with Turkey. America, nowhere to be found. Nowhere to be found. So you have Hillary Clinton and the Democratic Party acting recklessly with their computers. You have to wonder if the Russians hadn't tried to tap into the Republicans and maybe their systems were more secure. Maybe not. I don't know. I don't have the answers. I'm not going to speculate. But please understand that what Obama did was to empower Russia, and now he's screaming about this like a petulant child. He gave them a clear run. He gave them a clear run in the Ukraine. What did we do when Russia moved into the Ukraine? Nothing. You have a feckless, gutless, spineless president with no creativity except to create havoc in America and havoc in the Middle East. And now, in the last 3 weeks of his presidency, he's growing a spine. And what is he doing? Again, it's childish. It's childish. It's embarrassing. It's inconsequential. It's inconsequential. Now that he's leaving office, I'm going to make things tough for my opponent, for my party's opponent, because he's a Republican and Hillary didn't win. As an American, he should be standing there saying, I want Donald Trump to be successful, because if he's successful, my country is successful. The highest act of patriotism that an American can perform is to run for public office. You're the president. You had your shot. You had two terms. America went the wrong way on a one-way street. You blew it, Barack. It's over. The history books will record what you did. You can't erase it. It's written in indelible ink. This isn't Hillary's emails you can erase. But instead of saying, well, maybe I made mistakes. Maybe it could have been done better. Maybe fresh blood can come into the White House and make America strong. Maybe we can get Americans working. Maybe we can reduce the violence because of the gangs and the drugs that I should have gone after, but I didn't. No, that's not what Obama is about. Obama is a man who is grammatically challenged. He is only capable of conjugating verbs in the first person singular. The three most important people that Barack Obama knows, me, myself, and I. Whenever he talked about anything, it was always I. I took out bin Laden. No, he didn't. No, he didn't. It was our members of the SEALs. It was our armed forces who took them out. You may have given the order. God knows where you were most of the time. It's not the golf course. But it took those valiant men to go out there and make it happen. It's an affront to say, I did it. You didn't do it. You didn't fly in space. You didn't take out bin Laden. Give credit where it's due. That's what real leaders do. That's what real men do. My parents were so clear about how real men comport themselves. But then he didn't have the benefit of that kind of, upbringing. None of these people do that can conduct themselves the way they did. You see, I was taught the old idea of sportsmanship, that it's not how you whether you win or lose, but how you play the game. And throughout this country, we've seen this malaise, the athletes who use all kinds of drugs and steroids to win. That's not sportsmanly. That's not sportsmanly. The thugs that beat up their girlfriends. I mean, this seems to be the direction America is going, and everybody wants to end the nonsense. They want America to go back to its roots, go back to the days when men were men. And I don't mean this from a sexist perspective. God only knows. But what I'm saying is, Americans want leaders. They want someone who could stand there and articulate their dreams and then make it happen. And I find it amazing that Whoopi Goldberg said she had better qualifications than Donald Trump to be the president of the United States. What exactly did she do? Whether you like Trump or not, you got to give the man his due. He created a global empire by himself. His father certainly didn't hurt by giving him the money that he gave him. But you look at the movie stars, you know, these folks that go out there and they get all this money and they get involved with narcotics and hookers and all kinds of crazy stuff. Trump didn't do that, did he? Trump took the money that his father gave him and turned it into a global empire. Think about that, Charlie Sheen. You take your money and run around and get involved with drugs and hookers and porn stars. Donald Trump had money, and probably less than Charlie Sheen had, and turned that nest egg into a global empire. That's one hell of an achievement. You know, I'm just so tired of the nonsense. We have a new year coming. We have a new president coming. Help is on the way. I'm optimistic that Donald Trump will do what America needs for him to do. And all Americans, irrespective of their political leanings, should have the same hope and the same prayer that Donald Trump follows through on all of his promises. If he does that, America and Americans will be far better off. I wish all of you out there a very happy, healthy, peaceful, and prosperous new year. I ask that for your New Year's resolution, you do two things. To resolve to be honest about immigration when you discuss it with your friends and neighbors and not be bashful. And that you get involved because, as I always like to point out, democracy is not a spectator sport. I look forward to seeing all of you again next week here on the Michael Cutler Hour. But I want to remind you, please go to capsweb.org. Go to frontpagemag.com, The Social Contract, and of course, please go to michaelcutler.net. Happy New Year, everybody. See you next week. So long.